Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. Did you know that 60% of women in the U.S. will at some point in their lives work in the restaurant industry? For some, it's a part-time job during high school or college, but for millions of American women, it's their livelihood. Historically, women have faced significant challenges working in restaurants, from low pay that relies on tips to sexual harassment from customers and colleagues to difficulty accessing capital when trying to start their own businesses. But tonight, we're sitting down with two women who are working to change all that and help create profitable careers for women in the restaurant industry. Joining us in the studio tonight is Geetika Argwal. She's program director of La Cocina, a San Francisco nonprofit community kitchen and business incubator working to solve problems of equity for entrepreneurial women, immigrants, and people of color. Welcome, Geetika.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thanks for joining us. And we have a couple, we have a guest joining us from the Northgate Studios in Berkeley. We have Saru Jayaraman. Saru is the co-founder and co-director of Restaurant Opportunities Centers United, or ROC United, and director of the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley. Saru is a graduate of Yale Law School and the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. She's the recipient of numerous accolades, including this year's San Francisco Chronicle Visionary of the Year. She's also authored two books, Behind the Kitchen Door, a national bestseller, and Forked, a new standard for American dining. Welcome, Saru.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And of course, we invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation. We'll open our phone lines in about 20 minutes, but I'll give you that phone number now. It's toll-free, 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You could also email us at cityvisions@kalw.org, or you can tweet us at cityvisionskalw. I want to take a moment to remind you that we're in the middle of our spring membership drive here at KLW. So if you want to take a moment and support local public radio and City Visions, the number to dial is 800-525-9917, or you can donate on the web at kalw.org. So, Saru, I wanted to start with you. I wanted to get a landscape of the restaurant industry and specifically women who work in it. Tell us about how this industry treats women in this day and age.
Yeah, well, if you look at the industry nationally, we've just exceeded the 13 million worker mark in the restaurant industry. So 1 in 11 American workers currently works in restaurants. As you mentioned, over 1 in 2 Americans has worked in the industry at some point in their lifetime, but it continues to be the absolute bottom of the barrel, lowest paying employer in the United States. So every year the Department of Labor puts out a list of the 10 lowest paying jobs, and every year the 7 lowest of the 10 are in one industry, the restaurant industry. And that's largely due to the money, power, and influence of a trade lobby called the National Restaurant Association. We call it the other NRA. It represents the chains. And it's argued since emancipation of slavery that it should only have to pay nothing or currently the federal minimum wage for tipped workers of $2.13 an hour. It's a direct legacy of slavery. Today, 70% of tipped workers in the United States are women. They are women, 40% are single moms. They're largely women who work in restaurants like IHOP and Applebee's and Olive Garden and casual restaurants across California and America. They struggle with the highest rates of sexual harassment of any industry in the United States. And I think, to me, that just the very fact that you've got this huge industry of women, in fact, the largest employer of low-wage women in America, able to get away with paying $2.13 an hour, is a reflection of America's value of women and the industry's value of women. And California is one of 7 states that has gotten rid of this system, actually requires restaurants to pay the full minimum wage with tips on top. But the research that we've done connecting the subminimum wage to sexual harassment, the fact that you've got a huge industry of women basically told by managers, dress more sexy, show more cleavage, wear tighter clothing in order to make more money in tips, really shows us, whether you're in California or in other states, really the higher the wage, the less dependent this largely female workforce is on tips, the less sexual harassment you see, and the opposite is true as well. So on the whole, We see an industry that is very male. Only 1 in 5 chefs are women. Executive chefs in the United States are women. There's lots of, obviously, machismo and lots of inequity with regard to women moving up ladders. But we see at a structural level that pay is a huge contributor to the way in which women are treated and valued and, frankly, seen as professionals, because fundamentally, to me, what this is about is women being recognized in this industry as the professionals that they are.
So that sounds pretty bleak. You've mentioned that California has done better. What are some of the things that California, the Bay Area, still need to do better when it comes to women who work in the restaurant industry?
I'm so glad you asked that, because tomorrow morning we're actually releasing a report at Oakland City Hall at 8 a.m. On inequity in the Bay Area restaurant industry, because while we do have higher wages, and as a result of having higher wages and less dependence on tips, we have half the rate of sexual harassment of the rest of the country. Unfortunately, having half the rate of harassment in our industry still means we have much higher sexual harassment, rates of sexual harassment in our industry than most other industries. And again, that has a lot to do with the lack of mobility for women, and in particular, women of color. And so in our industry, you've got a compounded issue of both gender and race. And people of color and women are very segregated. Women of color in particular are segregated into lower paying segments of the industry, fast food and casual restaurants rather than fine dining. In a fine dining restaurant, they are segregated into lower paying positions, bussers, runners, or maybe pastry chefs, back of house. They are not fine dining servers and bartenders. And the fact that you've got, you know, a good 25% of 30% of jobs in the Bay Area that are livable wage, they're fine dining server and bartender positions. A fine dining server or bartender in San Francisco can make 6 figures. They're not the majority of tipped workers, but you know, they can make a lot of money. But those jobs are held, if you look at the data, almost exclusively by white men. People of color and women, in particular women of color, are not able to access those livable wage jobs, which results in the Bay Area having the largest gap between white workers and workers of color, and in particularly between white men and women of color, of any region in the United States. As progressive as we see ourselves, as good as we see ourselves on race and gender, we actually have an enormous gap between white men and women of color because of these issues of segregation and lack of mobility. And that is precisely what we're working with various cities, including the city of Oakland, to address. That's what we're talking about tomorrow morning.
So we shouldn't be patting ourselves on the back because we've gotten rid of the sub-minimum wage here in California. The structure is pretty ossified, so to speak, that really keeps women and people of color in a lesser position when it comes to not only working in the restaurant industry, but mobility within it. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right. And as I mentioned before, if we really ultimately want to professionalize this industry, to view all of these workers as the professionals that they are, and, you know, I use that word so intentionally. In Europe, you know, you go to school for many years to be a hospitality professional. There's no reason why these jobs could not be considered professions. They're skilled professions. In any profession, you not only treat and pay people well, you allow people to move up ladders. And those ladders don't really exist apart from the work that we and La Cocina have been doing to actually create opportunities for women of color, people of color, to advance into livable wage jobs, into ownership, into actually being the professional, fully living into the professionals that they are.
So you mentioned a lot about pay inequity and lack of opportunity for professional mobility within the industry. How about job security?
Job security. I mean, it's a term we rarely use because it just doesn't exist in our industry. And it's unfortunate. You know, our industry is going through the highest, the greatest labor shortage in the history of our industry. It's the tightest labor market possible. Employers are desperate for workers right now in our industry. And what our research shows is that paying people well, providing them with opportunities to move up ladders, is the best way to hold on to your best workers. And actually thinking about providing women of color, people of color, the opportunity to advance up ladders and be in fine dining, server, and bar, those are going to be your best workers. They're committed to, you know, the profession because they want to move up. They want those jobs. But it is the lack of mobility and the glass ceilings for both people of color and women and the low wages that basically results with combined with absolutely no job security that results in workers continuously moving from place to place, so that we do have the highest rates of employee turnover of any industry in the United States. And our research shows you can cut that turnover in half. We've surveyed 1,100 restaurant owners across America, quantified the results together with Cornell University's and School of Industrial and Labor Relations, found we've quantified that turnover costs chains, for example, millions of dollars annually in employee retraining and rehiring and lack of morale and employees not feeling loyal or invested in the business. Whereas companies that really invest in higher wages and access to better jobs, mobility, are able to cut that employee turnover in half and save millions of dollars. So if they quantified that, they would see investing in your workforce actually pays off in the long run.
So that is Saru Jayaraman. She's co-founder and co-director of the Restaurant Opportunities Centers United, or ROC United, and director of the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley. I want to bring into the conversation my in-studio guest here, Geetika Agrawal. And she's program director of La Cocina, a San Francisco nonprofit community kitchen and business incubator working to solve problems of equity for entrepreneurial women, immigrants, and people of color. So, Geetika, from your perspective, you're trying to give women the opportunities for mobility that Saru is saying they're never going to get or unlikely to get if they stay in the jobs that they're currently in. So tell us about how that idea emerged.
Sure. La Cocina was actually born out of informal women entrepreneurs that were looking to formalize and scale their businesses. The work and idea for La Cocina became actually in the 90s. And they were writing business plans with partner organizations and then not seeing those business plans launch. And so at the time, a feasibility study was done to understand what's happening here. You have existing entrepreneurs, they're women of color, they're demonstrating a desire to formalize their businesses, to build assets, which is one of the most powerful ways you can start to build your economic freedom in this country. And one of the first things that was discovered was access to commercial kitchen space, because that's the beginning of permitting. And so that's really where the community kitchen idea was originally born. And La Cocina, over the last 14 years, has evolved as a program by constantly understanding with every entrepreneur that comes in the door, what are the barriers that they're facing? What are the systemic barriers, be those race, gender, economic access due to being low income? And thinking about how we as an organization can work to remove those barriers. So these women that have the talent and the desire to formalize, to build economic freedom can thrive. Today, after 14 years of doing this work, there are 32 brick and mortars in the Bay Area run by La Cocina graduates. All but one of those is operated by a woman, and all of them are operated by women, by people of color. And if you look at restaurant groups nationally, we have tried to find one that can come close, you know, to when you get to the top. Just, I mean, Saru really eloquently articulated how women of color are really the ones that are the fabric of this food industry. And yet, when you start to look nationally at who's actually has the ownership, who has the power, who has the control, who's benefiting, you don't see that reflected in the ownership structure. We couldn't even find one that was female-dominated. So for us and for me, working in this program, the success of those entrepreneurs to move through this program is really a testament to the talent that we are overlooking. This past year, we had two entrepreneurs on James Beard nomination lists. We have multiple restaurants that are showing up on best of lists, including El Buen Comer, which is in the Essential 38. You have Nyambai and Reem that were on multiple best in America lists this past year. And I think that's a testament to the talent that we're overlooking and the opportunity to allow these women to lead us towards a more equitable food system.
So I imagine the women that come to you wanting to not only use the community kitchen, but then also use the resources and the support of La Cocina to help incubate their business model must have had to overcome tremendous barriers, as we've talked about so far in this hour. What motivates them to believe that it's going to be possible to do this when they've been working in an industry that's basically been treating them as poorly as Saru and you have mentioned?
You know, I think that one thing that I'm always immensely humbled by is the power that these women have to continue to work hard and to dream. You know, one of the stories that comes to mind immediately when you ask me that question is Guadalupe Guerrero, who's the owner of El Pípila, who just opened her restaurant across the street from the Airbnb offices at 8th and Brannan. And she was working for 14 years as a manager at Taqueria, and she did every job there. And she kept it open. She would work 7 days a week. And she worked hard enough that she was able to build enough income there to bring her two daughters with her to California. And finally, one night on a Saturday, one of her favorite musicians was in town, and she asked for the night off, and her boss said no. And she was like, that's it. That was the straw. After 14 years of working there, and she had been in touch with Alicia, who's another one of our graduates who runs a business called Alicia's Tamales in Hayward, who'd been encouraging her to formalize her own business. She knew what an incredible cook she was. And she started her business 6 years ago. She was ready for that freedom. So I think what they see, what all of our women see, is an opportunity for that economic freedom, an opportunity to take the talents they have and the food that they know and start to build a living for themselves and build prosperity for their families.
So we want to take a brief break to remind you that we're in the middle of our spring membership drive here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and wanted to take a moment to ask for your support for programs like this one, City Visions, and KALW in general. The number to dial to join us as a member is 800-525-9917, or you can also go to the website, klw.org. I also want to say hi to my co-host, Ethan Elkind, who's joining me this evening. Hey, Ethan.
Hi, Joseph. Good to be with you.
Great. And go ahead.
I was going to say this is a fantastic conversation, and I think this kind of discussion really emblemizes the kind of listening, the kind of support, the kind of broadcast media and journalism that KALW brings to the community. I mean, just hearing stories that Sarah mentioned about, you know, the Bay Area wage gap for restaurant workers by gender, by race, you know, that's the kind of information that local public radio is going to bring to you. It's not necessarily something you're going to hear from an industry kind of funded radio station. This is listener-supported radio, and having that community tie-in to the subjects that we cover, I think, is really critical. And so we really appreciate all the support from listeners. We hope you can give, maybe become a sustaining member for the price of a cup of coffee a month, a latte, maybe a sandwich a month. That can help really sustain this kind of programming. You can go to the website, kalw.org, to give, or you can call 1-800-525-9917.
And we're looking for 5 calls or clicks before 8 p.m. tonight. Again, by dialing 1-800-525-9917 or clicking on klw.org. And we have a really special gift to offer those of you who want to pledge at the $120 level, the La Cocina Cookbook. So and Gitaka and her colleagues at La Cocina have graciously donated books to us for the purpose of this membership drive. Gitaka, tell us why. Why did you choose to do that?
The cookbook is an incredible opportunity to not only cook through the world. You can make Guadalupe's famous green pozole, which is so delicious, or learn how to make a momo from Beanie's recipes. But each recipe starts with a story of the woman and how they got into cooking or why the food is important. And they're really incredible personal stories of their strength and just the incredible power that they bring to this food industry. And we wrote this cookbook because we feel like it's incredibly important to have their voices be part of this conversation. And so this, for us, is what we hope will turn into 40 cookbooks on their own, because we believe each of these women deserves the opportunity to stand on their own. And so for us, this cookbook is a chance to get their voices out there, get their stories told, have them start to become part of this collective conversation about equity in the food industry.
Conversations that we have many times a month and a year here on City Visions and in many other public affairs programs that are on the air here at KALW. So if you want to get that book, a $120 donation for 120 recipes, like a dollar per recipe.
Yeah.
That's a great deal. 1-800-525-9917 or click on KALW.org. What do you think? You're going to get one of those books, Ethan?
Well, you know, not only is that a great deal for getting recipes, but you also have the satisfaction of knowing that you're helping to support an important cause. So I think that's a 2-for-1, you know, plus you're going to get some nutritional value out of it. I just see this as an all-win situation. So definitely appreciate the support. Anyone who can call in with $120 to support local public radio, get that book, get the recipes, support local cooks. It's 1-800-525-9917, or you can go to our website, KALW.org. Joseph, fantastic show. Keep up the great conversation here.
And so by going to 1-800-525-9917 or dialing it, I guess, or clicking on KALW.org, we'd ask for you to, if you're a new member, to become a sustaining member. We're looking for people to give $10 per month. Make it a monthly sustaining gift. That way, you don't have to think about it. 1-800-525-9917 or KALW.org. Again, 5 clicks or calls before 8 p.m. And if for a $120 pledge, you can get the La Cocina Cookbook, which we'll hear a lot more about as we come back to our program. So this is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KLW San Francisco, and on the web at KLW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're talking about women in the restaurant industry. Have you ever worked in a restaurant? How were you treated? What do you think about tips as a form of compensation? The number to dial to join our conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You could also email us at cityvisions@klw.org, post a comment at the KLW website, or tweet us at cityvisionsklw. And just to remind you, if you want to show your support for KLW during our spring membership drive, you can call us at 800-525-9917 or click on KALW.org. So getting back to the conversation that we're having with Geetika Agrawal and Saru Jayaraman, I'd like to talk to both of you a little bit about how you came to do this work. You know, in the bios that I've read, and you come have had educations at elite institutions in the United States. You could have chosen any career. Why the food industry? Why restaurant workers? Why women specifically? Let's start with you, Saru.
Yeah, well, for me, it chose me. I didn't choose it. I was an attorney and an organizer in New York when 9/11 happened. And on 9/11, there was a restaurant at the top of the World Trade Center, Tower 1, called Windows on the World. It was on the 107th floor of Tower 1. And on that morning, 73 workers died. They either jumped to their deaths or were evaporated, frankly, inside the restaurant because the plane hit below them and the heat rose so quickly. So 73 workers died, and about 13,000 restaurant workers lost their jobs in the months and weeks following the tragedy. And I was asked, as a young attorney and organizer, to help the families of the victims and all the displaced restaurant workers. And what started as a organization to just help people get back on their feet and support the families of the victims very quickly evolved into something much bigger, because as soon as workers in the industry heard that we were opening our doors and actually, you know, helping workers in the restaurant industry, we were flooded. We were flooded with workers from all over New York City and then all over the country. And we've grown nationally. And 17 years later, we're 130,000 restaurant workers, 770 restaurant owners, and about 30,000 consumer members, all working together for better wages and working conditions. And over the last 17 years, we've done a lot of different things. We've opened our own restaurants, actually, and trained about 10,000 workers to move up the ladder into livable wage, fine dining service, and bartending jobs. We've written tons of reports and books and moved policy at the local, state, and federal level. We've done a lot of different things, but it really does feel like it's coming home full circle, because actually, I don't know if you know this, but Geetika and us, La Cocina and Rock, are working together on a big project in Oakland that is really kind of a full circle project post 9/11, because post 9/11, the workers from Windows on the World wanted to open their own restaurant that would be kind of a symbol, you know, in the name of their fallen comrades and coworkers, and it was called Colors. And in it, we've trained lots of workers to move up the ladder into livable wage jobs. Well, we grew and we opened Colors in Detroit, and we're opening one in New Orleans. But the biggest Colors is being opened in just a few months here in Oakland, California, right across from the Fruitvale BART station, in a building that we've bought called Restore Oakland, that will include a huge restaurant training facility. In fact, the largest one in the country. La Cocina will have offices there. Ella Baker Center is running restorative justice in the building. There will be a housing clinic in the building. It will be a massive project that will allow thousands of workers to move up the ladder into livable wage jobs. And it will be a wonderful restaurant run in partnership with Daniel Patterson of Alta Restaurant Group. And so I think, you know, I just tell you that story to say in a few months, we're going to see this beautiful kind of phoenix arise in Oakland that really is, in many ways, a phoenix rising 17 years later from a tragedy in New York.
Hmm. Wow, that's a pretty compelling story, and one you could not have predicted.
Right.
How about you, Geetika? What brought you to this work?
I think I feel a little bit like Saru that this industry chose me. I have a very different path. I have a tech degree. I wrote code my first job out of college, but I was always really interested in which ideas actually became good businesses. And so I always followed the train of what made a good business and what made a meaningful business. I started to, during my time, I pursued an MBA at Stern and spent time in London and India working in social impact investing originally, and really was interested in how we can use those approaches to start to make a difference. And through that journey, got much more connected into community work, which is where I found my home. I think for me, a lot of the complication I felt in international development work as somebody outside trying to have an idea of how people from that community should live and improve their livelihood was cleared up in community-based work, because I found that that is all about really listening to the community, understanding what already powerful people are looking for and what talents they have that are being underinvested in by our system. And so for me, that was what drew me to La Cocina. And as I learned about the history, and that's why I'm so proud of our origin, is that, you know, people always ask who was the founder, and I really feel like the founder are all of those informal women that have been hustling and have been making a living for so long and finding ways to build stability for their family in an economy that denies them equal opportunity, often doesn't even give them the opportunity to have entrepreneurship at all. And so that's really how I came to this work. And I, you know, what keeps me there is that all of these women and these stories, and just every single entrepreneur that's come through the door that we work with has taught me something different, and it continues to inspire hope for where we could go. And, you know, the Bay Area is such a rapidly changing place that the barriers are always transforming, right? Right. And we started in the Mission District because that's was really the home for so many of our of people of color, for low-income folks that were working. And as the Bay Area has changed dramatically, we've seen a huge shift in my home. I live and work in the Mission, and it's dramatic what's happened in the 5 to 10 years. There are now 100,000 more people in San Francisco than they were in 2010. And if you think about who's come and who's left in that time, we know the Bay Area is under rapid change. And so I feel like approaches like ours are really important to continue to keep multiple communities thriving in the Bay Area.
So I want to hear more about the women that you work with, Geetika and Saru, the women that you're fighting for, and what they what changes you're trying to bring to bear. But first, I want to take a very brief break to remind you that this is our spring membership drive here at KLW, and if you have a moment, take the time to pick up the phone and dial 800-525-9917 or click on klw.org. 5 calls or clicks are what we are looking for before 8 p.m. this evening. We're looking for new members at any level, but especially looking for people who want to become sustaining members. $10 a month, perhaps. How many, you know, cups of coffee is $10 a month, and what that could mean to a station like KLW, which gets 70% 6% of its funding from individuals, only 6% from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So we really turn to you to bring us the support, to give us the strength to keep going. 1-800-525-9917. It's a community-based conversation that we are having here every week, and we're hoping that you will go ahead and be part of that by dialing 1-800-525-9917 or klw.org. I just heard that we actually only need 4 clicks or calls before 8 p.m., so thank you to that listener who is showing their support for programs like City Visions and KALW. And you'll have more of the opportunity as the hour continues. But take that moment now, if you want, 800-525-9917 or klw.org. And just to remind you, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and streaming live on the web at klw.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're talking about women in the restaurant industry. And the number to dial to join our conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can email us at cityvisions@klw.org, post a comment to the KALW website, or tweet us at City Visions KALW. So, Saru, back to you. In your first book, Behind the Kitchen Door, you talk about how eating is such a big part of American culture, and how people don't always think about the workers in the restaurants where we go out to eat, are treated. You know, I'm thinking of, you know, the Portlandia skit about, you know, asking where your chicken came from, you know, and how much roaming time it got. People don't think about the working conditions of those who cook your food, who serve your food, and then clean up after you. We talked a little bit about this in the beginning of the program. Tell us a little bit about what the typical work experience is like working in a restaurant. You mentioned tipping, talked about sexual harassment. Say more about that. And also, in terms of job security, things like paid sick leave.
Yeah. So in that book, I share several stories of our members, restaurant workers, women and men, who struggle daily to make ends meet and to feed their families. I can share a couple of stories, but, you know, one that comes to mind is Claudia, a worker in Texas who worked at an IHOP earning $2.13 an hour. She could barely make ends meet. If you work in an IHOP and you work at, you know, the graveyard shift, you often are not going to make the full minimum wage and tips. And in fact, her employer told her, "I don't actually care whether you make the minimum wage or not. I'm going to report that you're making the full minimum wage and tips regardless of how much you actually make," which is another issue a lot of our members deal with, is that they're often taxed on supposed income that they've received and tips that they don't get. And so around tax time, we're always hearing from so many workers that they're, you know, getting taxed on tips that they never received. So in this case, she was, you know, her employer said, "I'm going to report that you're earning the full minimum wage. I don't care what you actually earn." She knew that in order to get the meal made to please the customers at IHOP, she had to kiss the cooks, she had to kiss the manager, she had to, you know, basically please the customers in order to get the tips. You know, for Claudia and so many women like her, who, you know, it's very gender segregated, women in the front, men in the kitchen, often men in management, which means that women really, there's the power dynamic between women who are earning the tips in the front and the men in the rest of the restaurant, you know, is incredible. You have the power of the consumer over the woman in terms of, you know, they can do anything to her in a lot of states because she earns nothing except their tip and she has to put up with it. The manager, who can basically give her a different shift or different day or different hour and all different table, and all of those things determine whether she gets $0 in tips or $200 in tips. And then the kitchen staff, we've heard this from a lot of women that, you know, they rely on the kitchen staff to get the meal made just as they need it to please the customer. So that gives the kitchen staff some power over the women. And you know, sometimes the kitchen staff says, what are you going to do for me to make the meal just as you need it to please the customer? So that power dynamic, because the tip income is so fluctuating, because they don't get a full wage from their boss, really creates a lot of different problems. And when you compound that with the lack of mobility, you know, there's another story in the book of a woman of color working at a restaurant like IHOP and then applying for a job as a fine dining server manager. And the employer, before knowing who she was, saw her resume and asked her for an interview. And then when she showed up, said, oh, we don't have any jobs. We've seen that over and over again. Then she says, you know, I wish I had a white male suit that I could wear, put over me so that I could show up to these jobs and actually get them. So if you compound the sexual harassment and the instability and the, you know, inability to make ends meet and the sexual harassment and the racial discrimination that prevents people from moving up the ladder, it really is a very challenging situation. So when you ask Geetika, what keeps people going in this industry? Why do they come to our training programs to want to move up the ladder into livable wage jobs? You know, people take such pride in hospitality. I really hope your listeners, everybody understands these are not, our members do not see these as last resort jobs or throwaway jobs. Our members take so much pride in their work, in being great servers and bartenders and dishwashers and cooks. They see it as a profession. They're just not treated as the professionals that they are. And I'll just give you one example. You know, we do run training programs to help women of color, workers of color, move up the ladder into livable wage, often fine dining service, bartending, wine. We had a young man of color in D.C. who went through our training programs, got very excited about wine, went through 7 levels of wine training and became a master of wine. There are only 75 masters of wine in the entire world. 2 are people of color and 1 is our guy. And for us, it just is an indication that there just should be no limit for these women, for these women of color, for people of color in the industry, whether they're formerly incarcerated or immigrants or whoever they are. The talent that exists and the ability to move up ladders is really incredible. I do just want to say one more thing, because you started by talking about the Portlandia sketch, and it's something that we talk about all the time, that that we wish consumers would think as much about issues of wages and benefits and mobility as they do about the local and organic nature of the food. And so we actually created an app called the ROC National Diner's Guide that tells you which restaurants are working with us to improve wages and working conditions and improve mobility. You can download it for free in your app store. There are lots of Bay Area restaurants that get gold and silver awards for doing the right thing. But we didn't create it just to tell you where to eat tonight, although you should support those great restaurants. We created it so you'd use it as a tool to go tell your favorite restaurant owner, who's probably not in the guide, that they really should be, that they really should talk to us, that they really should join what we call the high road to profitability. And we as consumers have tremendous power to make that shift happen by using tools like our ROC National Diner's Guide.
All right, great. And I want to get to hear more about how restaurants and restaurateurs are joining your cause. But we're going to take another break to ask for your support. Again, I am joined by Ethan Elkind tonight on City Visions here on 91.7 KALW in the middle of our spring membership drive. Hey, Ethan.
Joseph, great to be back with you. I'm really enjoying the programming. It fits in the theme that we've been running all day on KALW about food. It's an issue that we've covered a lot on City Visions. And, you know, here on this particular program, we're really taking you behind the counter of restaurants, behind the kitchen door, as Sarah's book is titled, to talk about those issues of harassment, inequality, the power dynamics that many of us miss when we're just focused on having a nice meal out with our friends without realizing the potential consequences of things that are happening right, you know, just a few feet from us at those meals. And this is a kind of message and information and guests that we want to bring to your attention. And you can call 1-800-525-9917 to continue supporting us, become a sustaining member today. Also, you can give on our website as well, kalw.org. And Sarah, since I'm here with you in the UC Berkeley studios, I know you do a lot of media. You do a great job getting this message out. It's such an important story that you tell about these workers. What was it that made you want to come on to KALW? What about the station made you want to take your extra time tonight to be here?
public radio is where it's at. It is definitely one of the most important vehicles, mediums that we have right now, particularly in this very difficult moment in our in American history, in the existential crisis that we're experiencing in our democracy. If there aren't publicly community-funded vehicles for communication of the news and information, then we truly will be giving in to a fascist state. We need democratically controlled news. And so I so deeply support public radio as one of the only vehicles for us to continue to get real information.
Well, Sarah, we really appreciate you being here tonight on the show and bringing that message about the people's radio here. This is community-supported radio. Again, that's 800-525-9917, or you can become a sustaining member on our website, klw.org. Joseph.
Yes, you can join listeners like Bennett Dubiner from Berkeley, who will be receiving the La Cocina Cookbook, which is available for a $120 gift. There are 120 recipes in that book, so think about it, $1 per recipe, and you could be supporting the work of organizations like La Cocina who believe in building community just like we do every day here at KLW, building community, bringing the voices of the community into our studios and opening our phone lines to you to be part of a conversation of how we can be better, even here in the Bay Area. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org. I just got an update. We just need 3 clicks or calls before 8 p.m. to meet our goal for this hour. Show your support for programs like City Visions and KALW by dialing 800-525-9917 or clicking on KALW.org. And let's get back to our conversation tonight about restaurant workers and specifically women and people of color in the restaurant industry here on City Visions on 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. You can call after you've donated to KALW. You can call us to join our conversation at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email us at cityvisions@klw.org or tweet us at cityvisionsKALW. So we have an email from Scott, and he says, my business is much like La Cocina, except that Eclectic Cookery, San Francisco's and the Bay Area's first-time shared commissary, is a private rather than a nonprofit business, a much larger enterprise. In our 35 years in business, women-owned enterprises have always been half or more of our customers. The food service industry, possibly not including restaurants, seems quite open to determined, ambitious, and hardworking women. So it sounds like there's people out there who are really interested in this kind of work and promoting it. Geetika, tell us how the women come to be supported by La Cocina. What do they have to do to get in your doors and work with you and get the support that you provide?
The woman at La Cocina and every one of our entrepreneurs actually goes through a pretty rigorous application process. We have recruitment events, and then they actually submit a business plan with our own application on top of that and letters of recommendation, which the entire staff reviews along with an advisory committee, and then we select from that a set of folks that actually go through a panel-style interview where they come and meet a mix of La Cocina staff and other food industry experts for an hour-and-a-half discussion. We really try to structure that every single step of the application process, both as a way for us to understand their business better, but also to be a resource for every food entrepreneur that touches La Cocina, to really support everyone, whether we work with them directly as a participant or whether we give them feedback. We really want to see more and more people have the opportunity to own their food businesses. So they go through an interview and also a tasting during that. It's always like one of the best days because I eat like 5 times. It's always incredible. And after that, we make selections, and we admit about 3 to 5 businesses 3 times a year. So over the course of the year, we admit 10 to 12 new businesses. The key criteria, the one thing is La Cocina really focuses on working with people that are low income. And then additionally, we prioritize women and people of color. So our goal is really to provide support to those that are facing the highest systemic barriers.
So people have to come with you with a business plan already in place?
Yes.
So how do they get help to
totally.
Get those business
Great
plans in?
Question.
Because I can imagine that's a high barrier for someone to overcome, perhaps.
It definitely is. So La Cocina's expertise is supporting folks who are already informally running their food businesses and formalizing those. So what we do is often spend sometimes up to 2 years with entrepreneurs before they're ready at La Cocina through a variety of things. We meet with them one-on-one. We give them warm referrals to a lot of the other incredible nonprofits that we have here in the Bay Area, Mission Economic Development Agency. We worked for a long time and we're part of Women's Initiative, who did business planning work with women and, again, focused in the communities that we work with as well. They shut down a couple years ago and we really still miss them here in the Bay Area. Renaissance Center, Central Community Partners. So we work really in partnership with a variety of the local community nonprofits here for business planning support, but then we'll still keep track of them, keep in touch, and support them. So we try to do whatever we can. But the goal is once you come to the La Cocina program and begin, that you're really ready to start to formalize and launch that business in 6 months. Mm. So if you're still thinking through the business plan, we want you to spend that time because it's incredibly important. But as soon as you come to the La Cocina program, entrepreneurs are starting to make investments in their business. And what we work really hard to do is support you in launching a business for $5,000 or less and really reduce the risk of that business. So we can't take that away completely, which is why we have a more intensive application process to make sure that the business owner and that woman is really at the point where they're ready to make that leap and start making those investments and scaling up their business.
And then you can point them to places before they're ready for you, places where they can get help so they're teed up to be
Absolutely.
Able to work with
we,
you.
Absolutely. We're part of the SFEDA, which is the San Francisco Economic Development Association, which is an association of all of these different organizations that we're really lucky to have in the Bay Area that specifically support small business ownership. So that includes micro lenders, that includes Start Small, Think Big, that does legal and accounting mm-hmm. service. So a whole myriad. And we meet actually twice a month as an organization to stay connected and be able to support each other, because this is really not, you know, Saru and I, we're all part of a larger ecosystem trying to work to build a healthy ecosystem for small business owners to thrive. And within that specifically, for everyone to have the opportunity. And that, you know, really our belief is that if we can lift up this system and make it more equitable for women and people of color and low-income people to access, that everyone will benefit from mm-hmm. that more equitable ecosystem.
So back to you, Saru. So you talked about the experiment that you've replicated in multiple places and is going to be replicated in Oakland soon, the Colors Restaurant, to try to demonstrate how livable wages and fair working conditions can be done successfully and profitably. Tell us how does that work? We all know how that the food industry and restaurant industry operates on razor thin margins. I imagine a lot of people out there might be like, how is this actually possible?
Yeah, well, our restaurant is a training facility to help workers move up the ladder into livable wage jobs, and we don't actually need to prove that it is possible to be profitable paying livable wage jobs, because we have built an association of 770 restaurant companies that prove that every day. We've got amazing restaurant owners that range from very small mom-and-pop restaurants all over the country, very high-profile companies, as I mentioned Daniel Patterson also, but there's lots of other great employers in the Bay Area, in New York, Danny Meyer, Tom Colicchio. You know, in Michigan, for those of you that know Michigan, Zingerman's. I mean, there's fabulous restaurant companies all over the country that really are very committed to what we call taking the high road to profitability, and have proved that paying livable wages, providing benefits, creating an environment safe from harassment and discrimination, allowing workers to move up ladders, really reduces turnover. And that is such a key. It's such a key, unmeasured, unquantified kind of component of an overall cost of running business that is a tremendous savings. And what our employers have, you know, demonstrated, and we've documented, the business case for doing it this way, for taking the high road to profitability, really is much better customer service, a much happier and more stable workforce, far less turnover, far greater employee loyalty and longevity, far less employee theft. Just I could go on and on. And for customers...
And that adds up, it sounds like.
It adds up. And for customers, what is your ultimate dining experience? Would you rather go to a restaurant where there's a server that's been there and has moved up the ladder from a dishwasher to a cook, maybe to a busser and a runner and a server, really, really embraces the profession as their career? Or would you rather have somebody who's like going through and maybe is, you know, temporarily in the J-O-B job and it's not really what they ultimately want to do? As a customer, I know me personally, I would want to interact with people who really are very invested in the success of the business and in the and in my dining experience. And
so let's stay with the customer as we wrap up the program, because I'm sure there are people out there to say, thinking, what can I do? Or maybe some skeptics out there might say, you know, I go to a restaurant in San Francisco and there's this little line item that says the SF mandate and it makes me pay 4% or some fixed cost. Why should I still have? I'm already giving, aren't I? Why do I have to give more in this case? Aren't consumers giving enough when it comes to restaurant workers' livelihoods here in San Francisco?
Well, San Francisco, I think, has some of the best laws on the books of anywhere in the country for restaurant workers, and so consumers are not being asked to pay more. They're asked to pay attention. They're asked to pay attention and think about who, you know, what is the, how is the business that you're walking into? Are you seeing real diversity among the people who are interacting with you? Are you seeing equity in terms of who's in the kitchen versus who's on the dining floor? So, you know, you've already got great laws in San Francisco. There's no need to think about paying more. There is a need to pay attention. There is a need to use our diner's guide, see who are the restaurants that are really committed to equity, and then push your favorite restaurants to be a part of equity. And, you know, I just want to repeat, tomorrow morning we are at Oakland City Hall with the mayor. You know, we're announcing incentives for restaurants that move in this direction to greater equity. And we want to have the same conversation with San Francisco's administration and San Jose and the state. I mean, we are really looking at how do we as consumers push more restaurants to actually work with us to actually transform their restaurants, increase mobility, increase equity, because it is totally possible. We've done it with 700 restaurants around the country.
So if there are listeners out there who want to learn more about how they can be part of your revolution, as it were, what can they do?
Number one, they can download our app, the RSC National Diner's Guide, and again, support the restaurants that get gold and silver awards in your region, and more importantly, encourage your favorite restaurants to join forces with us, learn how to move to greater equity, get help on how to reduce turnover and increase mobility. We can provide that support. So that's number one, use the app. Number two, you can learn. You can come to the event tomorrow morning at Oakland City Hall at 8. You can read our books, Behind the Kitchen Door and Forked. You can educate yourself about what's happening in the industry. And three, we've got this amazing project that is both a combination of La Cocina's efforts and ours in Oakland called Restore Oakland. It will support actually the changing of the whole Bay Area's regional restaurant industry. It will train thousands of workers of color, women of color, to move up the ladder. It will support the businesses that are part of La Cocina. It will ensure that there's restorative justice. It's all happening in one building. And we'd love for consumers to get engaged, support the restaurant, Colors Restaurant, when it opens in July, and be a part of the exciting building that's opening up right across from the Fruitvale BART station.
Thank you. And then you, Geetika, how can people get involved to support La Cocina and the graduates of La Cocina?
I would just really echo what Saru said, that to pay attention. We at La Cocina always say you have 3 opportunities a day or more, if you like to eat more often, to make a difference. And I think understanding who's working at the restaurants, asking questions about that, and knowing the owners. You know, there are 30 different brick and mortars operated by La Cocina graduates, and we have a lot more of our women out there selling. If you work at a company, you can ask who's catering for that company and request that La Cocina do your catering. Go out and find our women at farmers markets. You can check out our website. And we also have our cookbook. And I'd like to mention, too, that we twice a year do a storytelling event called Voices from the Kitchen. The next one is coming up on June 6th. And that is an opportunity to really dive into different issues that we care about, recipes, migration, race, refuge, all around the lens of food, and specifically lifting up people of color and their voices. Because I think another piece that is important here is that we start to pay attention and listen to the women that have been working in this industry, to the women that are operating and running restaurants, and start to understand and allow them to be part of this conversation and start to ask them, what are the directions? Where should we go? And let them lead us forward.
All right. And so that's a great way to end our conversation tonight. This was City Visions. Thanks to our guests, Agitika Agrawal, Program Director of La Cocina, and Saru Jayaraman, Director of the Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley, and also with ROC United, which is looking to increase the livable wages and working standards of restaurant workers. Thanks to both of you for joining me this evening.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
For a link to this and other City Visions shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page at klw.org. Our engineer this evening was David LaTulipe. Tonight's show was produced by Ann Harper. Join my co-host Ethan Elkind next Monday when he'll be sitting down with Oakland writer Tommy Orange, author of the award-winning novel entitled There, There. This is Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.